Carol, someone asked me if the bird sounds in my garden are real on Instagram videos.
Real? Of course they're real.
Well, I had to giggle. They are. But you know how Instagram has that music that has bird sounds added in? So I understand why they asked.
But still, anyone who knows you, I mean, adding bird song, that's a lot of work.
I'm not doing that. I said, so I thought maybe we should talk about how to attract birds to your garden again soon.
Yeah, we should. We had that lovely book last week, but you know, you can always do something more for the birds. But that's not our topic this week. So let's get started with this episode.
Welcome to the Garden Angelus, where we talk about flowers, veggies, and all the best dirt. I am Dee Nash from Guthrie, Oklahoma, and I garden an acre and a half out of 7.5 acres out in the country.
And I'm Carol Michael from Indianapolis, Indiana, which is in the path of totality for the big eclipse. I have a suburban garden measured in square feet, about a third of an acre.
We call ourselves Garden Angelus because we are evangelists for gardening. We love gardening and we want you to love it too.
Yes, we do. And we aren't afraid to spill the beans and tell all of our gardening secrets, the good, the bad, and even the ugly. But that's enough of who, what, when, where. Let's move on to this week's episode. Hello, Dee.
Hello, Carol. How does your garden grow?
It grows like February around here. We had a glorious Easter weekend. We recorded the podcast on Monday and it was kind of chilly, but it's just been cold and rainy. Tuesday morning, there were 2.25 inches of rain in the gauge, and there's just been enough rain to kind of keep you out of the garden and enough cold to keep you out of the garden. So I didn't get nothing done, except I did my tomato seedlings came up and I've thinned those out and I had to make an emergency trip to the greenhouse. We'll talk about that later. How about your garden?
Well, I hate to say it, but Oklahoma is absolutely beautiful. It's been beautiful.
I can't hear you.
It's been beautiful for days. Not too windy. It's been awesome. Okay, so I've been really busy. I sowed a bunch of zinnia seeds in various places in the garden, and people keep asking me, can we plant them now? Well, you know, that's up to you.
Not in Indiana.
But in Oklahoma, yes, you can. Because here's my thoughts on it. If for some reason we go down to like 32, they might die, but it's just a packet of seeds. So I don't see that it's a huge investment.
Well, wait a minute. Uh-huh.
What?
Some of the seeds that you bought aren't just a packet of seeds. You put some serious cash into some of those. So maybe
No, I didn't.
Well, no. If somebody did.
You said you, and I was like, no, remember? I wouldn't buy the 1995 deal of seeds.
So we just want to clarify, if you went to Menards like I did and bought an 11-cent packet of seeds, sure.
Don't worry about it.
Give it a try early. This is too early for Indiana anyway. But if you bought it for $20, you might want to hold off.
Yeah. I mean, if you bought them for $15 or $20, then hold off on them. But if you didn't, if you like me, your most expensive packet is $5, then you can plant them if you want to. Besides, we are almost there. It is April 5th. We're almost there.
No, we aren't.
You're just feeling bad today because, you know, don't be petty. It'll be hot here soon.
I'm not.
Okay. And then I transplanted a few things into the cutting garden, which are cooler weather annuals. And perennials. I have some perennials that I'm transplanting out there too. By the way, the fruit bowl yarrow has just been, I mean, it is so happy. And I thinned it all and I put some I put the transplants really small out there. It's coming up like gangbusters because it's perennial usually. But I don't know. This might be an annual yarrow. I don't know. I haven't looked that hard. But then I also put some in 4-inch pots and they are huge.
Really?
So I'm getting ready to plant them out there too. And then I have some echinacea that I planted from seed. In fact, I've done almost everything from seed this year, except for a few things that I bought and put into my pots on the deck, you know?
Uh-huh.
I think Masha's doing something bad. Masha, stop. Okay. And then let's see, what else have I done? I set up the drip system in the cutting garden with Bill's help and started working on removing the dead stuff in my pots. I got halfway through and I did some weeding. I've been busy.
You have been busy. You must have a lot of pots if you only got halfway through getting all the stuff out of them.
Remember how many pots are on my deck? There are so many.
So many.
They're on my story today, which you can go look at, but everybody else can't because it'll be gone by the time this publishes. Maybe I'll do a reel about the pots. Okay, so let's play favorites. You go.
So I walked out the other day. I believe it was Wednesday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Anyway, so I bought these little violas, this Viola Padata, which is the variety is Eco Artist Palette. And it's a perennial.
I'm looking at it.
It's a perennial violet. And so I bought two last year. I bought one from this woman that comes down to all the garden shows, Bennett's Greenhouse. Her name is Esther. She grows the most amazing, funny, cutest little things. She's not Amish, but she's something like that. But she just blows you away with these little plants. And so when I went to her booth, I knew I could get sucked in. I said, do you have any? I'm only looking for violets. She had one left. I bought it. And then this other little place near me had one. So they both came up because they're perennial. They both came up. So I think I found a good spot for them. So I had to text Courtney up at the greenhouse and ask if she was going to be getting any or could she get some for me. And after I had texted her, you know what she texted back?
Yes. She texted yes.
She said, yes, I have them. And then she showed them out for sale. And I'm like, well, this is an emergency now. I got to go buy mine before anybody else does.
You almost made me spew tea on my computer. Like, that is not an emergency.
So I ran up to the greenhouse. I think it was Wednesday. Oh, I bought six of them. They are perennial, so they weren't the cheapest things in the house. And I brought them back, and they're on my back step. I haven't planted them yet, but the spot is up by my garage. And it's just, they like sun. They like well-drained soil. They both came back beautifully. And I thought, ooh, I'm going to make a nice little patch there. It's going to be beautiful. Anyway,
it's going to be beautiful. They're very delicate, and they don't look like a normal viola to me, even a normal violet, because they seem to have thinner petals, and they're bicolored.
They are a native.
They're cute.
Yes. And here's the sad thing.
Mm-hmm.
So Walter's Garden is a wholesale place, and that's where she gets them in. On their website, and I put this on my Instagram, they said in 25 years, they've never known them to self-sow. And I'm like, no, I want them to self-sow. Anyway, they are native, and they are beautiful. And
they are beautiful.
That is my favorite. How about your favorite?
My favorite is, so I had a hard time deciding, you know, my shrubs right now and my small trees, this year especially, has really brought home to me why I did all that work to add small trees and shrubs to my garden. It has been a glorious spring. So I'm going to mention two favorites, and they're both natives. One's a selection of a native, and one's a I almost said straight species, but I stopped myself. One is the original, I guess, Rusty Blackhaw. So my Cherokee Chief Dogwood, which is a selection that two guys in Tennessee helped create a long time ago, like in the 50s, because I did some research on it recently. That tree is huge now. It is in the perfect spot. People tell me sometimes that it's hard to grow. And in their part of the world, mine grows on the west side of the house under a large oak tree. And it started as a small sapling. And now that tree is probably 20 feet high and about 10 feet wide.
Sounds beautiful.
It is glorious. And then at the end of my garden is a Rusty Blackhaw. I also have a Forest Rouge Rusty Blackhaw, which is a selection also. And it's young and small. Now, so our friend Gail Eichelberger is the one who convinced me to do Rusty Blackhaw years ago. It is an excellent pollinator plant. It's a viburnum, and it's native to Oklahoma and native to a lot of places, probably native to Indiana too. I don't know how cold hardy it is, but before you plant it, you need to plant it in a place where you don't mind if it sends you up shoots, because it's called a mother tree for a reason.
Right.
And it will send up saplings. And so I either cut these back, or sometimes I cut them and dig them because they come out and then they have their own little root system. And I've given tons of them away, but I always warn people it does this. And Forest Rouge does it too. This one is in full bloom right now, and it's probably, I don't know, 25 feet tall, 15 feet wide, and it's a true tree. It right. is beautiful, and it's at the end of my garden, and I think it's part of the reason that I don't have deer problems in my back garden, because they don't want to jump into that. You know, I have grasses too. They don't like that either. So those are my two favorites. I'm and really all of my small trees. My serviceberry started blooming for the first time. It's a young tree.
Right.
This cat is insane today and wants lots of attention. She wants me to let her outside. That's what she wants. So anyway, that's my stuff.
Well, I was going to say that dogwoods here are not blooming, but my serviceberry has been blooming for about a week or so. And dogwood should be blooming in another week or so. And then you always have dogwood winter. You've heard of dogwood winter.
I'm sure I have. Yeah.
If dogwoods were blooming this week, it would definitely be dogwood winter, but they're not. So we still have cold to come. I'll do it.
You do. And you know what? The thing is our last average freeze date is like next week, but we've had a freeze up to May 1st. It happens. But sometimes we have really early summers. So it's complicated, and you just do the best you can in spring. All right, go ahead.
A longing for Eden, for paradise, is buried deep in every human heart. And that is Christy Purifoy from Seed Time and Harvest, the book we featured last week.
And we really enjoy her books. So you came up with the flower idea, and it's because you bought a Northern Gardener's Guide to Native Plants and Pollinators by Lorraine Johnson and Sheila, I'm going to say it's Cola. So I need to get you a link on that. But anyway, it's a wonderful, wonderful book. And we heard Lorraine speak on an artist program that was put on by GardenCom.
By National Garden Bureau.
Oh, I am so sorry. It was National Garden Bureau.
It was National Garden Bureau and GardenCom, but yes.
That's right. They did it together. And so we were on that. We helped facilitate small rooms, and it was great. And Lorraine was just the most engaging speaker. I really enjoyed her. So your idea was that we are going to talk about three native plants to add to our garden. Yes, to us.
And I will say that the subtitle of this book is Creating Habitat in the Northeast, Great Lakes, and Upper Midwest, which is me.
Which is why I don't have it, because even though a lot of the things she suggests are good for here, I have a lot of good native plant books by people in my region.
Yeah. And I'll just speak briefly about the book, and then we'll do the back and forth with the plants. The way this is laid out, that she talks about the importance of planting native plants for pollinators, and they have many suggestions. And it's just not perennials. It's also grasses. It's also shrubs, trees, and vines. So it's you could plant your whole garden off of this.
Sure, garden. You could.
Yeah. So I went through and I have a lot of native plants. I have a lot of non-native plants too. But anyway, I found three. I thought, you know what? I should have those in my garden.
Mm-hmm.
And the first one that I came across was Prairie Smoke, which is GM Triflorum. And I have some GM. I don't think it's the native. And it's like an orange color, tangerine orange, I think it's called. But anyway, I thought I should get this native one and add it to my pink garden because it has pink flowers. And I don't think it would be that aggressive. Also has beautiful flower seed heads once it's done flowering. So that's my first one. I want to get some Prairie Smoke.
So I'm going to say this about GM Triflorum. I've tried to grow it three times in my garden. I cannot get it to take. We saw a beautiful example of it in the Lurie garden the first time we visited. Were you on that trip?
Yes, yeah. I was.
That's why I wanted to grow it, because the seed heads are the smoke and they're just the most beautiful thing. And of course, that was a Pete Udolph garden. And so he's the one who put it in there. And it's native also to Illinois. I cannot get it to grow here. It does not want to grow here. So you want me to do my next one? I have a lot of natives.
Yes.
So I don't know of any new ones. I, in fact, went and did a little research before we met just to see. But I really want to grow native passion flower vine again. I grew it one time on a railing next to my deck as a project for Lowe's Corporation, believe it or not. We had to come up with something and paint it. That's back when I used to do that stuff. And so I put passion flower on mine in the native one, and it attracts tons and tons of Gulf fritillaries. And yes. So for that reason, I want to grow it again. I also have in my garden, oh, I'm not going to be able to think, pipe vine, but I cannot make that thing happy in the spot I have it in. And the funny part is it's a pretty aggressive vine, but it just does not like this spot. It doesn't like this spot. It is not happy here. So I'm thinking about moving it over to another place where it might be a little happier and get a little more water. And then I'll put passion flower on the other side of my American wisteria on my arbor. That would be really pretty because you get the American wisteria blooming in about 3 weeks, and then passion flower would bloom all summer. So that's mine. What are you going to say next?
So next, I don't want to disappoint you, Dee. So I'm going to go with a violet.
Of course.
A native violet, the Labrador violet,
Viola. I don't know that one.
Labradorica. It's often sold as a ground cover. And so I think
I'm going to look it up.
Dry, shady. It has little bluish flowers, but grows very low to the ground. I have tried it, and then I don't know if it's, I just lost track of it and didn't care for it properly to get it nicely established or what. But I thought, you know what? I need to try that again. And so that is the plan. And I think okay. I know where I can get some.
Sounds good. Okay. So my next one is green milkweed, which is Asclepias viridis. And I have a huge stand of common milkweed going now. And it's quite the colonizer, by the way, the common is. I suspect green milkweed is too. But I love monarchs, so I'm willing to let it colonize. And then I move pieces of it into the upper pasture too. Because it's actually in my cut flower garden. It showed up. I did not plant it. It showed up all by itself. And then I let it kind of grow. And I noticed this year it's doing really well. So I've been moving it around the garden. So now I want to try green milkweed because I love green milkweed. I think it's really beautiful. And of course, monarchs. And they're one of my favorites.
That would be worth trying. I have some milkweed in my little garden, but I don't have as much as mm-hmm. I probably should have. And I had a swamp milkweed, and I think that has died out. So
swamp milkweed, from my experience, I'm sure yours is going to be the same. It comes and goes. It is not a long-lasting perennial. You know, I'll have it for a few years, and then it leaves. And then I plant it again, and then it leaves. And I planted it in wet spots. Doesn't matter. It just, you know, it comes and goes, and that's okay.
That is okay. So the next one that I have listed, you're going to laugh because we made fun of it several weeks ago. Verbena stricta, which is hoary vervain. And we both said, oh, we're not going to grow that. But where they don't have a photograph of the plant, they have some really nice drawings. And there's a really lovely drawing of this. And I think that this in the right spot would be a lovely plant. They said 1 to 4 feet tall. That's quite the range. But they said it's a flower and bee magnet. I'm not a flower and bee, a butterfly and bee magnet, which that's always good. And then it has hollow stems where they can overwinter. That's also good. And so I think where I have this little tiny, I call it the August Dreams Garden because a lot of stuff blooms late, but it's like a little prairie patch. I think that I should get one or two of those and stick it in there and see what mm-hmm. happens because I think that would be nice.
So I said I didn't have another one. I'm just going to talk about one I do have that I planted last year. Will that work?
Yeah.
Okay. So last year I planted frost flower and I was trying to look up the botanical name, and there are several plants that are in the frost flower series. And I think the one I have, this is the one I have, Verbena virginica, and it's called frostweed. That's another name for it. So that is just a really fun plant. And what reminded me of it was that it also has hollow stems like the verbena you were talking about. And so I think it would be a good one for people's gardens and easy to grow. And it's pretty.
It does sound pretty. I looked up frost in the index of this book, and the only frost that they list is frost aster.
That one I don't know.
Aster pilosus. I said aster instead of symphyotrichum.
Symphotrichum.
Symphotrichum. Mm-hmm. Aster pilosus. 2 to 3 feet cool. tall, white flowers fall. It looks a lot like fleabane.
Heath aster or fleabane?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I have fleabane in abundance in my garden right now. Oh, fleabane.
I do too.
Boy, if you let one flower bloom, you're going to have fleabane till the end of time. And it's all in my paths. So I've been pulling it out of paths. But you know what? It doesn't hurt anything. It's really easy to pull up.
Yep.
And boy, pollinators love that plant. And it has cute little rays around the center cone. So
I leave it sometimes because even a mature plant is not very deeply rooted. And so, but over in England, you know, they plant fleabane on purpose. And here it's just like, oh, that just comes up because this used to be a field.
Yeah. And they also plant a lot of Mexican fleabane, which isn't that the one that's multicolored? I think it is. It's got pinks and different colors. Mine's just a good old white fleabane.
So here's the thing about native wildflowers that I will say. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes, if you go to, like, I'll call them a big box store, you're not going to find a lot of these. There's a native plant society here. They have a plant sale in the spring. There's a couple other nurseries that specialize in native plants. That is your best choice if you want to buy plants. Seeds can be not, I wouldn't say tricky, but sometimes they need a little bit of cold before they'll germinate. So you kind of have to watch that. But go and find the native plant society in your area or a nursery that specializes in native plants to get the best selections.
Cool. I think you're absolutely right.
And
festivals here are the best place to go.
Yeah. There should be people there that know these plants and would be able to, if you told them a little bit about your garden, would maybe steer you clear of something that would be, oh, that would be horrible in your garden.
Right. That would take over. Or don't plant this in very good soil, Heath aster, because it will spread through your whole garden and it needs to be someplace dry and not good soil.
Or here's the really tall Joe Pye weed. Why don't you get this dwarfer one that'll only get about 3 to 4 feet tall instead of 5 to 6 feet tall?
Right. And don't be confused by little Joe, because little Joe still gets 6 feet tall. You want somebody like baby Joe or that other one that's called Ghost or something. So these are things you learn over time as you garden.
That's right.
Gardening is not a quick activity, and learning about gardening is not a quick activity.
A lifelong activity. We'll talk about that in a little bit. Let's do
that's what I was thinking too.
Let's do the quote and then we'll talk about the vegetable topic.
Gardening teaches us that we belong to nature and are also responsible for it. Human culture and nature's destiny are inextricably intertwined. And I have no idea how to pronounce this man's name or woman. I don't even know which one it is. We got this actually out of Claire Purifoy's book, and this man or woman's name is Vigen Guarian, and it's from something called Inheriting Paradise. I just thought it was beautiful.
Do you hear that now in the background?
I do not.
Oh, good. That's the 11 o'clock tornado siren warning of every Friday at 11.
Ah, we have them at noon on Saturday.
So anyway, our vegetable topic is the Garden Center magazine that we get an email about did a survey of vegetable gardeners, and we thought it was kind of interesting to go through and look at who is growing vegetables these days.
Well, it's interesting that things have really, really changed, in my opinion. 2020 certainly changed everything, don't you think?
I would say that is true, that people talk about before 2020 and after 2020.
Yeah, there's been some really good things. You know, one of the interesting things I found, and a lot of the young people who reach out to me for garden coaching, they really want to grow vegetables. And they don't know the first thing about growing vegetables. And honestly, vegetables are harder to grow than many things. And so they almost all started to get to work from home. And a lot of them have still negotiated with their employers to spend 1 or 2 days at home.
Yep.
And so they might garden coach with me on their lunch hour, for example. And I just think that that's kind of a cool thing because it's all about that work-life balance. And I see some of that in this garden center survey.
Oh, yeah. Because it's like, and well, here's something. And when I was at the greenhouse, we were not making fun of people who have absolutely no clue and come in and say, I'd like to start a garden. What do you suggest? Which is,
yeah,
you know, like, well, I would suggest, it's not like taking up knitting where it's like, well, get you some basic knitting needles and a thing of yarn and let's start off with a pot holder or a scarf or.
You know, it's the same idea, though. You have to tell them to start small.
Yes. Yes.
Start small. Don't get yourself overwhelmed. And here's one that I think is kind of funny. 50% of respondents are interested in growing vegetables inside their homes.
Yeah,
That's not the easiest way to grow vegetables.
They need to grow microgreens. I've got a whole plot of them in there ready to harvest.
And while you can start other vegetable plants inside your home, it's harder. I mean, if you've got a little sunny patch outside on a balcony or a deck or someplace, your driveway, you're a lot more likely to get a better harvest. I don't know. Growing vegetables under lights in your home would be hard. You wouldn't get much food.
So the other thing that the top vegetables grown are tomatoes, obviously.
Always.
Yeah. Peppers.
Yep.
Cucumbers. Herbs. And I would never have guessed this one. Carrots.
Yeah, I have somebody ask me about carrots every other day. And I'm like, don't start with carrots. Carrots are a little bit hard and take some real time. So I liked the part over here where it said local is important. They said 64% of people said that the vegetable plants you use in your garden grown locally is really important to them. That's interesting.
That is.
I will say that a lot of the vegetables that you buy, wherever you buy them, are pretty much grown locally, even if you buy them at the box store, because even if you buy Bonnie plants, those are grown, at least they, as of the last time I checked, they have farms in Oklahoma that grow those. And the reason for that is they don't ship very well.
No.
Vegetables are not good shippers. And so while you might be able to grow, say, a shrub like Sunshine Ligustrum I'm looking at outside, you could ship that from across the United States. It's hard to ship vegetables. They're tender. They have tender stems. They're short season for the most part, annuals.
Yeah. And I don't know if there's a specific place that grows the Bonnie plants here, but I know that there's a couple of big places north of Indianapolis that grow tons of stuff and it's shipped to all the big box stores around here. And and sometimes what people don't realize is that name on the container is just a license to sell that in that name brand container. We won't mention, I mean, there's proven winners.
Just pick one. Yeah. But
there's all kinds. And it's like they have to pay for that container with that name. And so those are grown all over. The greenhouse, they grow tons of quote unquote proven winners. She has to put them in a proven winners container with a proven winners tag. And so they might be a little bit more because she has to pay for all that.
Right. You're paying for that name. And you're also paying for the fact that, say, Proven Winners has looked at these plants and feels like they are truly tough, for example.
They're better.
And grow well in many different places. So you're also paying for that research and knowledge. This is not promoting Proven Winners. I mean, I think their stuff is fine, but it's just an example. Bonnie Plants is another example. That was a company that was owned by a family. It was named after the original person's wife. And then eventually they sold, I don't know which generation sold it, but a generation of the family sold it to Scott's Miracle-Gro. And so what I found interesting about their plants, because I look at them when I'm, you know, when I'm out and about. Burpee's another name too. But the interesting thing about Bonnie plants is, of course, on their packaging, it'll say something like powered by Miracle-Gro or grown specially with Miracle-Gro because that's part of Scott's name, right? But I noticed that about 2 years after Scott's Miracle-Gro bought Bonnie plants, they came out with a huge line of organics. So that tells you how, and those obviously don't, they aren't powered by Miracle-Gro. So that tells you how important organics are to the people who are growing vegetables. They ask for them specifically.
Yeah.
And that's a difference, a big difference from when I was a young gardener. Growing organically was not as much of a thing back then.
It's a huge thing now. And they don't really address that in this survey. I did find it interesting that in the survey, where do people learn how to learn about new vegetables? 23% learn at the local garden center. 15% learn from podcasts and webinars. That's us.
That's us, because we try really hard to give good information. And I know that there are several people on YouTube, which would be the webinars. They try really hard too. And there's some bad, bad information everywhere online. And then there's some really good information, depending on who you follow.
That's right.
So I thought that was good. I like that 7% still find out from friends and family members.
That is also good. 6% from social media. That's where you could get into a little bit of trouble.
Yeah, you have to be careful who you follow. I had a guy write me about the landscape fabric thing. He told me that my information was bad for Florida. And I laughed. First of all, I'm not writing for Florida, but I actually know some people who are garden writers in Florida, and it's still good information for Florida, but that's okay.
That is true. Okay. One last thing on here. What is the most important attribute for choosing fruits and vegetables? And 40% want something that produces lots of fruits and vegetables.
Well, of course they do, because why would you grow it if it doesn't produce quite a bit, right?
Right.
But here's the thing. Some things don't produce, some type of plants, some vegetables you grow, don't produce a lot, like corn. Corn doesn't produce a lot.
No, it does not.
You get two nice ears.
Exactly.
Per stalk, if you're lucky. So you can't judge, you know. I think there's a real misconception about vegetable gardening, and I see this a lot with my clients, that they want a whole lot of stuff and they don't want to wait. And strawberries would be a good example of something that you got to wait if you want to grow it.
Yes, that is true.
So there's just things that, you know, we are used to going to the store and seeing a box of strawberries, but we have no idea how many plants it takes to make that box of strawberries. My cherry tree is a good example.
Yeah.
My pie cherry tree, that whole tree produces one pie.
That ain't much.
And people are always shocked because they want to grow a cherry tree. And I'm like, well, first of all, you need a pie cherry tree, not a sweet cherry tree. Sweet cherry trees don't like Oklahoma. And secondly, it'll produce one pie. One.
Yeah.
It's a good pie, though.
Yeah.
It's a great pie.
Yeah. So the other thing that I thought was interesting is 17% of the people want specifically adapted for my climate in the fruits
that
and vegetables. Because I think a lot of newer gardeners especially don't understand that something that grows really great in Indiana might be a big bust in Oklahoma and vice versa.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. And that's where you get into all kinds of information that it can get really complicated. Hybrids versus heirlooms, open pollinated, you know, it can get complicated. That's why I wrote a book on it a long time ago.
There you go. We should put a link to that. So that is
just my book.
Yeah. It's still for sale.
It's getting old. It is still for sale. It's still out there. I'm surprised. And people still buy it. So I guess that's why it's still out there. So that was very interesting.
Yes. And I will say, based on that survey, that you and I are not normal gardeners anymore, Dee.
No, we've been doing it too long. And now we just grow for the fun of it.
There you go. All right. I'm going to do a quote and take us into our book topic. I cannot imagine life without books any more than I can imagine life without breathing. And that is Terry Brooks, whoever Terry Brooks is.
Terry's absolutely right.
Exactly.
I finished up. Two books this week. So our book this week was sent to us by Quartro, and we were excited to read it. And it's called Simple Country Living, Techniques, Recipes, and Wisdom for the Garden, Kitchen, and Beyond by Annette Thurman of Azure Farm. And this was written by an influencer, but she's an influencer with some good experience.
Yes. I will note, I was very happy to see that she didn't take up gardening in 2020. She took up gardening. The economic collapse of 2008 is what got her and her family interested in, as she would say, a simpler life. Plant bountiful mm-hmm. gardens, preserve fresh seasonal produce, make your own natural cleaning products, more, which really does sound like how my grandparents lived.
It does. And it also sounds like the back to the land movement of the 60s and 70s. And it also sounds like what I did when I moved here in 1988. You know, she's not the first person to talk about these topics. They've been popular for a long, long time. But nothing in gardening is really new. Nothing in homekeeping is really new. But she is bringing these ideas to a new audience. And she does this through her website, social media platforms, et cetera. And I noted when I read the book that she has over 184,000 followers, including two, which is Carol and Dee, because her Instagram channel, I don't ever know what to call it, is really, really good. And it makes my followers look like not very many. I'm impressed because here's the things I read through the whole book. So I appreciated her practical ideas and her crafts. They were practical. They were not crafts that no one is ever going to do.
Right.
Those drive me nuts. And then I loved how she was honest about how hard farm work is and how you need to start small. And yes. One of my favorite parts where she said, it isn't just sitting in the shade watching chickens and drinking lemonade. But then she has a sense of humor because she said, but the lemonade is pretty good. And the next page was a recipe for homemade lemonade. And yeah. I thought that's a good sense of humor.
Yeah. And I like that when you look at the recipes, because sometimes, and there's a funny meme going around, when you look at recipes and it's like, you know, with the simple ingredients that you have on hand, and then they'll list some bizarre spice.
20 ingredients that nobody has.
Yeah.
Right?
And it's like, where would you even buy this? And, you know, so I like that the recipes are fairly simple. And so even somebody mm-hmm. like me that doesn't spend a lot of time in her kitchen could whoop together some of these.
She also tries to use everything. She's about not having a lot of waste and stuff that I would normally just throw into the compost pile. She saves and does things with, like makes vegetable broth, stuff like
right,
that.
Right.
And she always has a section, including family, what to do with your kids. And I think that's huge because doing stuff with your kids. The funny part about her book is I did all this stuff. I used to make my own homemade lemonade all the time. Now I didn't use honey. That might be fun. And mine was out of the Southern Living Cookbook. And then let's see, I did stuff with my kids. I did not homeschool them. She was homeschooled. And you can tell because she has a real love for hearth and home. Uh-huh. And so I did a lot of the same things she did out here. It was before social media. So it never occurred to me, you know, to write it. I mean, I had a blog as of 2007. But by then, my kids were pretty big. So my end all of it is I'm really glad she's reaching a new audience. She's very pretty and her home is very beautiful. And it's just it's a beautiful book.
It is a beautiful book. And I like, there's a certain seasonality to it. So like, for example,
yes,
she talks about seasons for food. And so here's the foods we would normally eat in the spring versus summer versus fall versus winter. And I think there's a certain rhythm to eating that way where you're eating by the seasons.
Well, we should eat by the seasons, really.
Right. Well, in today's modern grocery store, you can walk in and get anything in any season. And so not of great quality sometimes, but.
Well, or sometimes it has, you know, stuff that hurts us because there have been some problems because you don't know where it's farmed. And if the manure on it is fresh, it can make people sick, you know? Yeah. So there's been some talk about that in grocery stores too. So maybe you don't want to eat food from Chile. Not that I have anything against Chile.
Yeah. And so this is a beautiful book. It is from Quarto. They sent us review copies. We are pleased to have them. And this is one I think I can share with some of my nieces and nephews who are interested in this type of thing right now.
Yeah. I thought actually I would give it to my daughter because I think she's the right age group for it. I think she's reaching out to Gen Z and Gen Alpha, and also the millennials, who are the ones I wrote a book for. So I think it's a good book. The title, again, is Simple Country Living, techniques, recipes, and wisdom for the kitchen, garden, and beyond.
Very good. All right, do that next quote, and let's go to that next topic.
And the secret garden bloomed and bloomed, and every morning revealed new miracles. Frances Hodgson Burnett, The Secret Garden. And if that isn't spring, I don't know what is.
I don't know
every
what
day
is
different.
So right in the middle of my Easter celebration, which we had on Saturday afternoon, mailman comes, brings me my big box with the botany game in it.
And is it not the most beautiful game you've ever seen?
It is the most beautiful game I've ever seen. And some of my nieces and nephews who do like to play games are like, what'd you get, Aunt Carol? And I said, I got the most beautiful game in all the world. And so listeners, remember last spring, we talked about they had a Kickstarter campaign for this botany game. And mm-hmm. It's Botany, a Victorian Expedition. And we both invested in that. And so a year later, here comes the game. And we bought all the add-ons.
Expansion packs.
Yes.
Yeah. Expansion packs, the real coins. We bought it all. And you know what? I'm really glad we did because I've played it. I got mine 2 weeks earlier and I invited my daughter, Claire, and her husband, Vi, over to play it because I knew that they would like to play it because they play games. Playing games is a really popular activity with younger people now. Good for them. Get away from those phones. And then anyway, we loved playing it. I have since written back and forth with the people who created this game. They are the sweetest people. They are just nice as they can be. It's being played all over the internet. It is being very popular. And what you are is you're a botanist, an explorer, and you are traveling all over the world to gather specimens, and then you're trying to get them into either pressed specimens or your Wardian case. And of course, your Wardian case is worth more because those specimens are live. And then you try to get back to your estate before your money runs out so that you can put them into your greenhouse. And then you can get more money from your estate, and then you go explore some more. And whoever ends up with the most specimens and the most greenhouses and conservatories and an orangery, if you can get it, whoever ends up with those things wins the game. That's the simplest part of it. But there is so much more to it than that.
Yeah. And we got to emphasize again, this is a beautiful game with the card packs and the floral pictures and everything.
Drawings. Mm-hmm.
They have done a marvelous job. And so.
Well, and it's also hilarious. I mean, because you have these cards, these expedition cards, and you just get into all kinds of trouble when you're on this expedition. And it's how do you get yourself out of this trouble? And then I guess you can also poison each other. We did not get to that part, but you have to have the poisonous pack, which you and I have. So next time we play it, we've added those cards to our deal. We just tried to play the straight game the first time because it's complicated.
Yeah.
And actually, we're going to link in our newsletter to a very famous game player who plays the game because that's how we learned to play it. Vi knew of her and he said, I knew when she played it, it was a good game.
Yeah. The other thing is, so I'm not sure when I'm going to play it. I hear there's a version you can play by yourself because I'm not amidst a bunch of people that love to play games, although.
Yeah, invite those nieces and nephews over. You'll have a blast.
They would have a blast playing it. They have another game. They're going to do a Kickstarter called La Fleur, which is.
I want it too.
I want it too. Because even if I never play the game, and I will play it, it's so beautiful.
It is so beautiful because it's on Redoute florals. And so. These people have really had fun with their games. This one's so beautiful. And every time you get something, I kept saying, oh my gosh, this is blah, blah, blah. And they have the botanical name on it. It's a great game. No one paid us to say this stuff. We paid them to buy the game.
We did.
Also, the funniest part about the game for me is I kept getting red algae, which I'm terribly allergic to. Because I have alpha gal, and I can't tell you how many red algaes of various sorts I got in the game every time I turned around. And I was like, get rid of that red algae, because I would try to play it away. It was just hilarious. My kids loved it.
So one last thing. So my one nephew's really into a lot of game playing, and he goes to this Gen Con game playing conference down in, it's always in Indianapolis.
Like yes.
10 miles up the road. No, lucky less than you. 10 miles up the road. Oh, I don't think I could go. These people come, some of them come in costumes and stuff. I mean, it is a big deal.
Yeah.
For like 3 days. And I said, I think I heard that this young couple that developed this game, I think they're going to be at Gen Con. And my nephew will take off work and he will go for the entire time. And actually, he'll hook up with somebody and work in their booth to get the entrance fee or something. And a lot of these, they have like freebies they give away just at Gen Con. And he says, well, if they got something, I'll pick you up, whatever it is, Carol. I'm like, will you?
Yeah, because they might have another expansion pack. You never know.
Something that they'll give away or whatever. But I'm going to make sure that he knows the, I don't know if I can say this right. It's Duxominium, DuxSominium.com. And we'll put that on the show notes. But I'll make sure he goes to their booth at Gen Con and is like, if they got something extra, get it for me.
So my son-in-law, the other son-in-law, Robert, who's married to Megan, he was laughing at me because I was so geeking out over this game. And he was kind of rolling his eyes. And I was like, don't roll your eyes. I know I'm geeking out about a board game, but it's about plants.
Exactly. Exactly. And I'll tell you another thing, Dee. We're going on and on about this game. So I'm in.
We'll have to send them the link.
So I'm in some of these groups with GardenCon. We call them power circles where we meet to talk about. And I meet with the podcast one. And so I was talking about this game and they're all older people like me. And they're like, how'd you find out about that? How can we get one? And I says, well, the Kickstarter campaign is closed. So you cannot until it goes to sale for the general public. And they were so jealous.
That's funny.
All right. Now I'm going to do a quote.
You move on. Okay.
If you always do what interests you, at least one person is pleased. And that is Katharine Hepburn.
I thought that was so funny.
I love that quote. I love it. I might put that on my website. I love that quote. Because you can't please everybody.
When I read it.
You can't please everybody. Just do what you want.
No. And my Instagram account has gained a bunch of followers and some of them are crabby. I'm just going to say. Would you like me to tell about the rabbit hole?
Yes, your rabbit hole and my rabbit hole.
Okay. So I met with a group working on advocacy for Alpha Gal sufferers. I got invited to be on this panel who's reviewing various things. And I did a lot of research for it because there were some really impressive people on this panel and I wondered why I was invited. And then I also finished Brideshead Revisited for Well-Read Mom, which I can't say enough nice things about Well-Read Mom because it has just made me read things that I've never read before. And some I have read. I loved Brideshead Revisited. I loved everything about it. So I did that. Those were my two rabbit holes.
So my rabbit holes, I do want to confess, and they're on Goodreads, but remember a long time ago when we were talking about Gardening Can Be Murder by Marta McDowell, and then it got us into some. So I started reading the Agatha Raisin Mysteries by M.C. Beaton.
I love those. Yeah.
Anyway, so my thing to do is to check out the audiobook from the library. And then I listen to it while I'm cleaning around on like Saturday or Friday or when I'm cleaning the house and stuff. I'm always listening to that. I put it on 1.75 speed. And so I can usually do the whole book. And, you know, by the end, I'm sitting down eating lunch. But anyway, I will confess that I'm on number 15 already.
Wow. You're much faster. I also have a confession to make about Brideshead Revisited. I did listen to some of it on Audible. Because Jeremy Irons reads it and he was in the show. And I watched the show years ago, but the book is so much better. So I would listen as I drove back and forth to town and then I'd come home and read it. And then I'd skip ahead in the audiobook the next time I drove to town. And I also did it while I was cooking because that's a great thing with audiobooks is that you can listen to them while you make the bed, while you cook, while you clean the kitchen.
Pretty much anything. Awesome. Anything except when you're vacuuming, you kind of have. Can't.
And I don't want to listen to them in the garden because I really want to listen to the birds.
Your fake bird sounds?
My fake birds. Yeah.
Anyway, so my rabbit hole is I did another Lost Lady. I put up Viola Brainerd Baird. She does.
Probably
she wrote, Baird. Oh, the Wild Violets in North America, of which there are 1,000 copies from 1945.
Only 1,000 copies.
Yeah, they're numbered. I have number 550. And and she signed all of them.
Wow.
And wait, is it 40? No, they were published in 1942. My copy was purchased in 1945 because it has the original receipt bill of sale in it.
Wow.
They paid $10.
That's a treasure.
They paid $10 for it. And today that would be $172.
It'd be very expensive. Yeah.
So I was doing some research. So that's on the Lost Ladies thing. I was doing some research and I don't even know, but I'm looking at this newspapers.com page. And that was back in like the whole page would be about gardening. This article, that article.
And, yeah.
You know, I found this article written by somebody named Mrs. L.L. Huffman. Forget her. You can't find her anyway. I have no idea. You Google her, nothing comes up. Not even the article that she wrote for the Charlotte Observer. But over on the side, they had a list of little gardening books you could buy. And so I found another Lost Lady with this little book. And so I went out and thought, you know what? That's probably a pretty good book to have. I'll just say that it's on American Pioneer Gardens.
Cool.
And so I went online and I found an eBay seller with a very nice copy. They wanted like 20. I offered 10. They said 15 and boom, I bought it.
Yeah.
So I'm waiting for that to arrive. It could be a bust or it could be like a whole new thing. Who knows?
Who knows? So this little book, is it part of that same series of little books? Or do you think
this one about wild violets?
No, the one about the Pioneer Gardens.
No, not at all.
Have you written about it on Substack yet?
No.
Okay, I didn't think so. Okay,
no, I just found out about her. I'm doing that Substack now that's getting busy with gardening and stuff. I mean, I haven't even posted on my blog since April 1st and today's the 5th.
I've been trying to post on my blog. I've been working on it, but anyway, I keep getting distracted. I have things to do.
Lost Ladies is going to bump to every other week for a while just because I got a lot going on. So let's talk about those garden commissions. What you got going?
I need to weed. I need to dig out. I need to put on my gardening clothes that are permethrin bonded, and I need to go down the lower garden and dig out that heath ester. And then I need to finish my pots, but I need to do that first because I want them finished by tonight because my kids are coming over. And then I need to buy a couple of roses for my priest, who's my good friend. He wants Earth Angel is one of the ones he wants. So I've been looking for it. And I need to enjoy these beautiful days in the garden. That's all.
So I'm hoping that beautiful days in the garden arrive by Monday.
They will.
So I need to weed, I need to mow, I need to tend to my seedlings, I need to watch an eclipse, which by
when
the
is
time,
that eclipse again? When
it's
is that
Monday the 8th, so by the time this episode comes out, it will be over. I'm not doing the eclipse update yet. I got to finish my garden update. So as posted on Facebook and stuff, on April 13th, I will be at the Clark Pleasant Library Branch Author Fair in Whiteland, Indiana, selling books. Not speaking, just selling. Then on April 20th, I'll be at the Hamilton East Public Library author sale, which is actually at the Fishers Forum in Fishers, Indiana, behind the IKEA. So I might have to make a side trip to IKEA. Anyway, selling books. I'm not speaking. They're just author fairs. You know, local authors come in, set up tables. They got their books for sale. But only one of us, one author, will be answering gardening questions for free. That'll be me.
You.
Okay. So. You want it's the eclipse time. Update? So by the time this episode launches, the eclipse will be in the past. So we'll know, did we get clear skies? And right now, the forecasters are saying Indiana looks like your best bet for clear skies. They're saying Texas is going to be rain and clouds.
Yeah, the clouds are coming into Oklahoma about midday. So we may not have, I mean, I'm in the 90% group. We may not see it. I don't know if we will or not.
Well, it'll definitely get dark.
Well, yeah, it'll get dark, but I, you know, again.
So we'll know, was there a lot of traffic? Was it as interesting and as magnificent as I expected it to be? And I was talking to a neighbor last night, and she said they went down to Tennessee in 2017 to watch the total eclipse. She said it was very cool. And we both were grateful. She said traffic was horrible down there. We're both grateful that we can just basically walk out the front door, stand at the street, which dead ends into a pasture, just look to the west up a little bit, and we should be in good shape. Don't have to go anywhere. So
Bill wanted me to ride the motorcycle with him down to Southeast Oklahoma because they have 100% totality. I said, no, thank you. Can you imagine being on a motorcycle and all that traffic? No, thank you.
They're telling locals, and not so much here, but some of these little towns in Illinois and stuff that they got one gas station, they're telling people, you know, get your food, get your gas, get everything to hunker down for a day or two. Not because they think it's the end of the world, but because you've never seen the crowds that are coming to your part of the world.
Same thing in Hochatown. It's the same way. They're like, there's only like two gas stations, guys, so we may run out of gas. So they're telling the visitors, if you're going to come down here, be prepared.
Get a full tank.
Because it's a little tiny place. So I can see why they're saying that. Anyway, There you go. I want to show you my shirt, which you'll have to just tell people what it is.
It says, rethink the stink, plant native. Bradford pears are invasive. Yeah, that's a good shirt.
Yes, and it's from the Native Habitat Project and Science Visuals at Science Visuals. And so I bought this as a fundraiser for them so that they can restore more native habitat in the southeastern part of the United States, which people think the Southeast, and they think this about Oklahoma too, that it was all wooded. It was not. It used to be more of a savanna. So they're trying to restore areas so that they have wildflowers. And by the way, in my upper pasture, I have a new wildflower. I will take a picture for the newsletter.
Very good. Let's wrap this up because we have gone on and on and on. I didn't think we had much to talk about today. Thank you for listening to The Garden Angelist. I hope you've hit that subscribe button so you don't miss a single episode. We publish every week on Wednesdays at 12 a.m. Eastern Time.
And if you listen to Apple Podcasts, we love a 5-star review. That helps us get noticed by that algorithm. And could you also share our podcast with your friends? Word of mouth is still the best way to get the word out there.
And be sure and check out our show notes for links for more information about today's topics, plus links to our own websites.
And if you're smart, you'll subscribe to our Substack newsletter, The Garden Angelist, at substack.com, also linked to in our show notes. If you do, you get a link to listen to the podcast a day early, and it's free.
And if you want to help support us, use those affiliate links. If you buy something after clicking through on them, we earn a small commission, and it costs you nothing.
Or you can set up a monthly subscription through Buzzsprout or make a one-time donation through PayPal, and someone did last week. Thank you.
Yes, thank you to everyone who has done so. It helps us pay for the podcast hosting.
It was lovely to visit with all of you over the Garden Gate. Bye until next week.
Bye, everybody.